also cutting Jamie's hair, so I'm going to cut her. He is a master human. There is a February 24th, 2022, and there is 0106. Very excited for our first meeting of this afternoon to meet Jamie today. Our members are Representative Crump, Representative Marquez, Representative Carr, and myself, Representative Sandusky Chair. The order of facts that we are required to conduct business. For those in the room, please keep your hands on your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. I don't think we have any other things we're hoping. Before we begin, as always, I'd like to thank Leah Frazier and Jackie Russell, the House of Representatives, Secretaries for Members, as well as Alex, and these are the two all in for staffing the committee today. Today, the Public Affairs Committee will hear from the Department of Public Safety, President Richard Kirchner of Golden Heide, and Megan Meekus of the Chamber of Law Family Association, and the Department of the Village Public Safety Officer Program here in Alaska. Just for committee member references, we provided a copy of the NPSO Working Group report recommendations and findings that have been a joint House and Senate bipartisan NPSO Working Group established previously to identify opportunities to strengthen rural public safety opportunities within Alaska. So that's been made available to members for reference and review. I'd like to begin by inviting Commissioner Corporal and Director Hart from the Alaska Department of Public Safety.
Thank you. Chair, I'm James Crockwell, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Public Safety. I'm Chair of the Committee. I am Phil Hard, Director of the Village Public Safety Office and Operations Program. I don't have a presentation, but what we want to do is have a conversation about the vocational program and where we would like it to go or how we go in that direction. The first thing I want to say is that we had a pleasure to be here and be guys again because I actually remember when my first time I testified, it was probably less than a week when the job after being absent for the last 6 years for about 4 years. And certainly, been able to grasp a little bit of what we need to do as a department to continue to grow. And one of the things that struck me when I came back to the department was the direction of the NPSO program was going. And my assessment of the program was that the department wasn't engaged in the program at the level that I thought it should be, and the provenance of the program wasn't as high as that should be within the department. It took me a while to kind of figure out, where do we go from here? This is really important, and I always consider the vocational program as a reference to this department. We have our ups and downs, and we go back and forth since I've been married, but it is certainly important to our department, to the place in the last state troopers, and to the communities that they serve. With all that being said, I realized that we had to move the NPSO program as a sound last state trooper component and move it into division levels. One of the things that that did is that it added to the prominence of the department and also signified to our employees that the department is a vital asset to our department, to the people that it serve. So with that move, I had to come up with a person I felt very comfortable that I trusted and who was actually mentored to me in leadership positions. That's a retired producer of the line. And basically, a lot of reference. I certainly wanted to be flexible and I wanted to look at different avenues to provide law enforcement or provide safety to our communities in rural Alaska. As a state, it's a state we want to think of. We haven't done very well enough. Progress in that region where it allowed to provide law enforcement services equally throughout rural Alaska. And part of our overall directive as a department is to bolster up our resources to build rural Alaska. We still provide the services for urban Alaska, but if we continue to do what we've been doing for 15 years, our people are going to change. the place that was against Bohemian Central Alaska and Western Alaska. It's popular with the places worried about it. It's kind of interesting that we're discussing the Canadian lines and internal interactions. But frankly, the big places were the first Native Canadian lines when you think about what their purpose was to be on scale troopers become more effective, in particular when they're now on the way, streamlining the intelligence. Visiting a particular place where they could interact with and would communicate with and I would accomplish your particular job. And so, from that context, it's really interesting and I think pleasing that this is a subject of conversation in a committee like this, that people recognize it's a huge piece of how we interact with different communities in Alaska. We have always been as well as we should be. So I'm going to take my historical perspective and the agency and interact now with the regional group person and understand from their perspectives what it is about the program that needs fixing. And we've spent much of the last 5 weeks together through the digital coordinators discussing those very things. And it's interesting because they were interacting with the people in the legislature. Created the report that was referenced earlier by the chair, and I reviewed that report as one of the first efforts to cover some of what the commissioners asked. And I have aligned in many cases with that report and the regional corporations. There's really three places that we need to address. One is the structural statute. Program in the first place. When you think about it, that was more than 40 years ago. When you're pioneering the ground, you don't always get it right. And I think there are pieces of that statute that we don't get right, and we need to take a look at that. The features of the statute are the regulations. They have been more restrictive than they need to be. Restrictive in that they've left people unserved. And I think we need to make sure that we don't do that. There may have been well-intended purposes behind some of those restrictions in the 2010 regulations, but I think what we can say after 40 years of this is that no presence or absent presence is not the best crime in the long run. We have to do something about that. And then the third thing is understanding that state resources are probably not solve this either alone, and that we have to figure out how to interact with the federal government on tribal matters and figure out how we can coordinate that. We're different than the Lower 48, we're the 30-based programs of the Lower 48, but NXCOM is pretty clear that the federal government retained responsibilities to the welfare and safety of tribal communities in Alaska. And so, That's a piece that's going to be complicated. I'm still just sort of easing those things apart, but I'm looking forward to it. I think this is a very, very important part of the Department of Public Safety. I was recently interviewed about that, coming from a trooper perspective. I grew up in that organization. I grew up in the uniform, they were around uniform. I had to start thinking to the office of state troopers on what they accomplished. But they're not everywhere. They can't be everywhere. And what I have come to understand is while a responding trooper is critical to an emergency or a serious crime, they're not more important than the individual sitting in the village waiting for that response to occur. And PPSO has begun that effort. Through the department, I think it was an innovative program that the department undertook to make sure that it was a bridge, so to speak. But it's certainly not as mature as we had hoped it would be through when I came back here just a little more than a month ago. The program isn't serving the people that it once served, and that's a problem we have to solve. So I guess I'll leave it at that, and I'm glad to be Thanks, Linda. Nice job. Looking forward to the conversation.
I'm not sure if I can hear the questions. That's all right, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Popwell, the city is not to make the DPSO program a part of the commissioner's office. What was the primary reason for that decision? I have a follow-up question, but why was it the first critical step in bringing about the kind of reform that you're looking to make?
Well, to be fair, Representative Ortiz, it's in came back after 4 years and as the federal House state troopers spent 4 years in overseeing the DPSO program, had a big gap in charge of the DPSO program. And essentially when I came back after 4 or 5 years, I just got into their moment and first of all, the staffing level of the troopers, I didn't feel comfortable with the staffing level to give them to take the position that I thought was critical to the actual operations of the troopers and take a position out of that and have another point that we're already having one with the DPSO program. But I didn't want to see the DPSO program go in the same direction that always has and being from the department for, which has been over 30 years of my life in the department. It's hard to step away from a program or even from a department and come back. But when you're involved in that day, I mean, things don't really change. It's just a program, and we fight fire after fire. And so the focus gets lost, what I felt in the program, even when I was the colonel. And again, you haven't done any step away and looked at what I consider your failures. I felt that my family was able to provide the necessary support, direction, and the ability to be flexible with the DPSO program, and he's sort of out of the process to where we're at right now. I only share in that based on specific pattern or anything like that. One of my perceptions, was about the DPS program and one of the reasons for its inability to be as effective as we'd like to have been. Students seem to be not calling a breakdown, but maybe a lack of common respect for the troopers versus the DPSOs and what the troopers vision. That's a lot to say, but I'm sure teaching from what seems to be about the DPSO program and how those guys are and all those kinds of things. And the thing I'm saying is that was it in your opinion a weakness in terms of the perceptions or the general perceptions of the troopers in relationship to the DPSOs who are serving? Was it kind of like a lack of respect, communication, those kinds of things between these two groups? And if that's the case, is your decision to move away from the troopers that include that? And I know you meant this, but that was just my perception and the things I was hearing was that there was this lack of common respect and terms of sort of respect that this thing about your defense of, whatever. And the second thing, please share with us. Martin, that's a hard question to answer because I know that there are reasons that feel like the troopers seem to disrespect them. But I also know that the troopers rely on our DPSOs every day. Every response that they go to the first DPSO, the first one will come, the house picks up the airport, the ones that flew a crime scene, the ones that assist in the event
sexual assault in the village of Virginia. There's a little matter that is starting to go on there. We'll have to gather the evidence. I'm not sure that the conditions of the shot are all these things. But I think we have a different, quite a different class. People with the suburban, they're always actually our members. And what other people that have disagreements and determining the PSOs do. They're the way we work them out. And I do think bringing the judicial program into the judicial office again elevates that. And it also sends a strong message from troopers that, they're directly working for the judicial office, and it makes a difference. We've had discussions about, going to aliens, and do we want to continue that approach, but during those conversations with the artists, one of the problems we saw was that the judicial between right next to our troopers, but also to our police officers, and they could interact with you know, this we need to train, both language care for this department. I can talk to them about is one of the things we're looking at is what level of training do we really need to provide to people. So it's just one of the concerns is that our training families have taken this long, and do they really need that level? It creates a hard stream for the defense, especially if they're living in their community, needs to be done for that much because they can lose all those consistencies and either money or training. So those are the things that we're looking at. I'm not sure that I directly answered your question, but my hope is that we would never look down on the PSOs because, again, they're critical to our mission. If you look at, you may have done a study a while back ago, if you look at the PSO and the village that responds to the sexual assault, personally, sexual assault that happens that doesn't have any PSO, our GFR prosecution rates go way up when there's a PSO in the village responding to that. And I think that's a discussion too that the call I've had is, what level do we want our PSOs in? I don't know, I think it goes down a little bit, but it should be to the level that they require with the community wants. And what I can say right now, I think there's a lot of optimism in the PSO program and the party as a whole. I think we're really moving forward and providing advancing, providing law enforcement for our communities, not including the PSO program. But, we're putting criminal investigators for the first time, and I'm going to credit Colonel Barrow for doing that. We put together a really good program to do that. We've got a sergeant and three criminal investigators down in Bethel. I'm not sure they're all moved into those positions. We've got one of the first bakeries and two up in the Northwest area in Gospel. And again, the hope is that they'll focus on this. I had a homicide on our religious here just two or three days ago, that they'll do the investigation that will not consider person off patrol and let them spend more time in their communities and also handle the moral crimes that are getting handled right now that make a really big difference in our religious, whether there's somebody broke into the store or broke into this school, and also provide support for our BPSOs because the more in your villages, the more they'll be having the BPSO program. And certainly, knowing your area, you'll be able to get BPSOs, you're going to get point three. And as you tell someone to follow up on that, I've got a lot of videos now, which is not so fine. I'm sorry about that. But we are trying to address the needs of rural Alaska that we have struggled with in this department since I've been on it, since really stated. And I think I'll get that point in a sec. Sorry, I don't remember that. One of the things that I thought was successful when I was a colonel, I actually had to learn it. We lost all our positions back in 15 and 16, which we had BPSO. Support troopers in our villages, or our bigger, heavier villages. And that provided a little bit more direction and oversight for our patrons, so it's helped them with their reports and interact with them. We had five, I think, almost all of them in the Bethel region. And
focus of was the PSL program and, you know, tribal leaders about the difficulties of recognizing the incredibly challenging work of being a public safety officer in our village in Lacrosse, Alaska. I might argue from my perspective that it's a lot more difficult than being a trooper because these are community leaders selected from within their home communities, often responding to that frontline, very difficult crimes committed against people that we love, or, you know, potentially having to work with people that they know well in their community. And so, just to put on the record, what a great page of talent that the department is bringing into the room today. One question that I have for you, Dr. Hart, is can you speak to how the bipartisan working group findings have advised your work, your ongoing work within the department to strengthen the PSO program? Can you speak to how those outcomes are informing? I know, Dr. Hart, you indicated that you've looked at the outcome of that work and you've continued to work with the legislature in strengthening the PSO program. I'd love to hear a little bit more.
You know, those conversations are obviously ongoing, but they're very, very favorable. You know, I come back to this department and engage with people on the program. I'm amazed at the level of support that I hear from folks who have heard loud and clear that there's some distress in the program and they're wondering what's to do, what is necessary to help. And I've been very favorably impressed by that, and I expect that. As a result of that working group's effort, that we will likely see many of the supports that we need to see to further this program. There's a long way to go. I want to do it intelligently. To both of your representative Ortiz's comments about the program, I think it's fair by that disappointment that I hear. It comes from unclear expectations. When I came to Western Alaska, for example, in the 1980s, the program that we dealt with then was not the program that you see today. It is Eskimoxy. For example, the PPSO program was recognized as a public safety effort, not necessarily a law enforcement effort, to deal with the very things you just described, putting people into a place in a small community, taking them in a small community, to police their family and their neighbors through a small, healthy situation. But we lost that in many communities. And I think some of the disappointment that you've heard Representative Ortiz speak to some of that. And that's where I think we have to recognize the program's purpose. And how to ensure to try to figure out what's the best fit. And we can do it in the Department of Public Safety and look at a position and say, well, that's the position. Well, I think we need to look more at what the village problem is and then look at the suite of things in our toolbox to deal with that. So there could be a PSO that doesn't necessarily need, nor does the village want, a law enforcement focus. That would be the basic level of the PSO program, which is what we did before. But then as people experience new training, gain experience, and get capacity, maybe they transition to an intermediate level. We have some counselors already in the program with corporal level VPSOs and sergeant level VPSOs. And so that they can step into a more complex role in the village, but it's a discussion between the region and the village. Department of Public Safety to figure out what that best fit is. And in the statute to support the village public safety officer, there is a regional public safety officer program that we've never, in the department, really figured out how best to use. There have been attempts to use it, and I think maybe for whatever reason, didn't work well. But why would that not become your most capable VPSO, fully in senior regions, how we use that model, but you don't impose that model on our village. Where it actually makes that level of attention. And so I think, you know, the expectations of the department, the expectations of the regions and villages, help us to figure out what a DPSO needs to look like in a particular village and try and certify them to that standard. So that's, I hope that answers your question.
Well, thank you for that response. I think what I see when you understand is that expectations have changed. And I'll just recall one of the examples that we heard from the tribal leader in Southeast in our planning committee was the hub and spoke model of department response to the state of the community to the point that tribal leaders are standing in the middle of the body of victims until days later when there can be a response, and clearly that's inadequate. And so hearing the department expressing the acknowledgement on that, I think is showing progress, and just really appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion today. Any additional questions for the commissioner and Dr. Owen and some of the representative? Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize because I said that for a couple of minutes because these things were talked about. Because you said you didn't have a formal presentation, but just looking at some of the specific recommendations based on where this came out, I'm thinking you haven't been implemented yet. And I just wanted to ask if you could comment on that. And the topic that keeps coming up, and knowledge is limited, I will admit, but it seems to come up in education and healthcare for rural communities is things like housing and some of the basic needs. In here, it talks about the need for flexibility in the footprint to sort of make all of that work as one of the key recommendations, and then more clearly outlining, as we just talked about, sort of the more public safety role, especially, where are you at with kind of those recommendations, or kind of that you have this kind of vision you're trying to accomplish, or really scaling up and trying to bring the numbers down? Is that more the focus right now?
Chair, the city representative, the owner, that's a part of each discussion right now, and the focus of student 981, and I think House Bill 131. So I think you have to look at how the program was built early on and the regulations that informed it really placed limitations on how you could spend money. The support program, and it encouraged villages to provide the housing and office space to support the APSO in order to participate in just the mechanics of the program. And over many years, we figured out finally that model just doesn't work. Not only do villages that could own that kind of infrastructure, it's not sustainable over time. And then there are villages that can't even get to that point, but don't get to participate. And they may be the very villages that need that participation most. And so we have to figure out how the program can support the infrastructure necessary, and that goes to the retention issues that are referenced in this program as well. So it has to be a big piece of the reforms of this program that you can't tell villages and regions to only participate if you can do X. We have to figure out what that needs to look like, and I understand that's an enormous undertaking when you look at the number of villages we have throughout Alaska. That goes to my earlier comments about this is where we need to interact with our federal government and understand what their obligations are, what are their capacities, how can we create a more coordinated and collaborative approach to public public safety in Alaska, because we cannot do this alone.
Thank you,
Madam
Chair. I appreciate that. And the phone number, so I can start up, because like I say, this is as an urban person, an issue that I care about because I know the importance, but it's a little bit a deep knowledge base that I'm trying to learn. But I just hope it's something we can address the way. I was so moved last weekend with the youth perspective, we could put a little more trust in that relationship so that, you know, we can buy our keeper's beans. And this is too foundational to the health of a community that, you know, you could easily see why there'd be additional benefits outside of just nursery and being more salary by public safety, but just, you know, the overall health of the community. So, you know, I'm just a supporter, learner, but I just want to share that because it's been in my mind, you know, that there's a number of others.
I want to acknowledge and thank Senator Olson's office for their leadership and continuing to work with the department on SK1, which you had already mentioned, our colleagues that you're working on, helping to integrate some of these work group recommendations. So appreciate the leadership of the department and working with this kind of one. That's also been referred to this committee. And so this is hopefully laying the groundwork here today to be able to dig into that process a little bit more. Any other questions at this time for the commissioner and the director? Thank you so much for being here. We know we only have our time. We can probably move on to some of our additional testimony if you have additional questions before then. We might ask you to come back for it, if that's okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next up, we are hearing from Michael Newman, who's also on the panel this morning in terms of availability for the committee this morning. Mr. Newman is going to be presumably a member of the leadership of North Islands Association. Mr. Newman, if you can begin by introducing yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Michael Newman. As Madam Chair stated, I'm the Public Safety Officer Program Coordinator for the Ocean Parallel Islands Association. Also, this year will be my 20th year as a Public Safety Officer. Thank you, Madam Chair, and to many members for the opportunity to testify at today's hearing. Commissioner Cockrell and Director Hart covered a lot of things that I wanted to touch on. So, I'm going to go through what I have. And I'd like to address some of the questions that the members had to the commissioner and director, also if possible. I would like to begin with acknowledging the work that the BPSO legislative working group, a truly meaningful stakeholder, bipartisan legislative effort to improve the BPSO program in public safety in Alaska. Efforts of the working group began paying dividends shortly after the findings were released. As the grantee's relationship with the Department of Public Safety slowly began to improve and has grown to the partnership we have today. This partnership can be attributed largely to Commissioner Cockrell's commitment to public safety and the PPSO program. The grantees would also like to acknowledge the staff of the PPSO program statewide office and Director Hart for their support of the program. In my 20 years with the program, I have never seen the relationship between the grantees and the Department of Public Safety as healthy as it is today. The partnership that we have today has never been seen before. I speak for all of the 10 grantees when I say we hope the relationship we have presently continues to grow and becomes the normal for the program. In the past, I have heard more times that I can count that the program is broken or failed. I have never viewed the program this way. I see it as distress due to different management styles and support over the years. As with most law enforcement agencies, we are still having issues with hiring and retention, but we have been working hard to combat this and hope to see improving numbers in the coming months. A few of the things we've been doing right now to stem the loss of BPSOs and increase the numbers that we hire. So we have been working with Northwest Strategies with a multimedia campaign for the BPSO program, something that we've never even been told in the past. We are working with Alaska Executive Search to help find qualified candidates for both public safety officers. And at this point in time, through their work, we have received 200 additional applicants. And just starting in the coming months, we are working with the U.S. Army Skill Bridge Program, which is an internship program for soldiers that are getting ready to get out of service and still want to continue service to the community. So we will be bringing soldiers that are getting ready to PCS out into the program as interns to see if we can make that one of a very strong partnership in obtaining recruits for the program. We also have some programs in session as Director Hart touched on. The program in Michigan has been morphed into what it is today. So the statute and the regulation really truly no longer reflect the scope of the program. That's the basis of what I have right now, Madam Chair, but I'd like to address some of the questions that many members posed to the Commissioner and Director Hart, if I could. Representative Ortiz, through the chair, I'm sorry I'm speaking, but so we have to look and make sure I'm getting this right. You mentioned to the Commissioner about bringing the BPSO program under the Commissioner's office and not from under ASD. I just wanted to bring something to the committee's attention that after the legislative working groups report came out and there was the discussion of putting the program under DCCED and removing it from the Department of Public Safety, the coordinators gathered back up in our office in Anchorage, and for 3 days we sat in a small room with giant post-its all over the walls, and we were doing pros and cons. The pros of staying with DPS, the cons of staying with DPS, the pros of going to DCC, the cons of doing that. And in those 3 days, we actually came up with what the commissioner did, and he had no knowledge of that when he moved the program under. We were looking at it as, you know, the best way to stay with the Department of Public Safety would be to become kind of what we're not actually listed as a division, but we are staffed as a division under the commissioner's office as NFT, AWTs, the police standards council. So we kind of got what we wished for without anyone actually knowing. So, you know, it's difficult where we were under, say, the Washington State Troopers directly, or they have a mission. They're extremely busy, and they're holes of sorts in that. So you put a program under there, but we necessarily didn't get the attention that we needed at times. And so, under the commissioner's office and the director of art, I think we're very fortunate to be where we are. And as I'm speaking today, when I say we, or grantees, I'm speaking for the 10 organizations, not just for myself or my organization. And, you know, we are grateful for where we are today, and we think it's the right place to be. So, I just wanted to address that representative Ortiz come to share and looking at that list. Representative Dwyer, through the chair, you mentioned infrastructure. And that's always been an issue in a lot of the regions in the state. And Director Hart and the Commissioner touched on that. And I just wanted to point forward that, you know, this year during the budget, this is the first year ever that the BPSO program actually put in CIP requests for funding for that type of infrastructure. You know, it's always, I always found it interesting when I would watch testimony before I started testimony, or even when I testified until today, that the budget always comes up. And it's always looked at as whatever the budget is, $14 million, you have to get the office of how can that be. But I think it's because most folks look at it as, but it's, they're just looking at salaries, range, indirect rates, overtime, but they don't see all the other moving parts that are related to the program and that we need to provide our officers to provide those services. Our time, our grant is broken out just like any other grant with personal services, travel, equipment, supplies, administrative costs, and that's another thing that always comes up with administrative costs. You know, everybody has them. The processes go through to receive and negotiate and cooperate with the federal government. And, you know, me not being a CFO or an accountant, not really what we're interested in giving or what that process was. But that process, I actually reached out to my CFO last night just to get some information. And I think it's a negotiating rate with the federal government. That rate is based on actual administrative costs for the year. That cost is confirmed and confirmed by our most recent third-party audit to be fair and reasonable. During the audit, administrative costs are assessed for reasonability. If they're found to be unreasonable, most items will be flagged within our audit and being flagged in an audit, as you will probably, as you all probably know, could affect the funding from all the referrals that are affected by those flags. Provisional rates for the following year are also based on the most recent audit and then finalized after those true numbers come in at the end of the year. So that's a lot of information that I just found out last night that I've never been able to share before, and it gives a little background on the process. The other nine entities may be a tad bit different, but it's all based the same, and then the number is based on whatever the consequential agencies that our agencies have the largest number of grants of funding from. So for us, it would be HHS, and for the others, and what agency that number is based off of, that's where it came to go. But I just wanted to share that also.
I believe I had another question that's posed.
Thank you, Mr. Director. I'm not sure who the question came from, Madam Chair, so I'm not sure if it's addressed. But Director Arnold addressed those public safety officers and needs and training. And what I can tell you from my experience in the field over the years is they get varies greatly from day to day, village to village. My days were always different, and that's one of the things I love about the job. If I just wanted to be a law enforcement officer, that's what I would have done. You know, the troopers are true law enforcement professionals, but village public safety officers are multifaceted public safety professionals, and that's what I love about the job. In my time in the field, probably a solid 50% of my overtime to the communities was related to medical emergencies and not necessarily the law enforcement side. The other 50% was pretty much law enforcement and arrest and prisoner transports and such. But I think it's important to realize what Director Hartford is true, but also to that is, you know, every community can change in the blink of an eye. You have a community that has been an emergency medical fire focused for their village public safety officer. You know, then there's a motor vehicle accident, but then there's a motor vehicle accident with a fatality, and everything changes. Or there's a homicide or a sexual assault. So that officer needs to pivot and provide that service also. So I just wanted to touch on that also. Madam Chair, do you have any questions from the committee or yourself?
I am going to direct off your question. Actually, I think you touched on a little bit the similarities or differences that you see between Coopers and BPSOs. I'd be interested in hearing you talk a little bit more explicitly on your experience in the field and similarities or differences with respect to the roles and responsibilities of troopers and BPSOs, essentially meaning are they the same, are there particular differences, as well as can you speak to the variation between salary of both types of positions?
Okay, I can try to answer that for you, Madam Chair. Like I said, Alaska State Troopers are true law enforcement professionals. That is their main focus. That is what they do day in and day out beyond the road system or rural Alaska. For village public safety officers, we have four main disciplines to speak of. We have law enforcement, firefighting and fire suppression and prevention, emergency medical services, and search and rescue.
of course, the troopers also provide certain functional services, but both of them are passed through badge, so I need to mention that also. So, pretty much when a trooper goes to work during the day, he knows what his job's doing the other day. He's going to be patrolling, answering calls, doing what he needs to do to keep Alaska safe. When a village public safety officer gets a call, they can do any number of things. You can do 24/7, 365 when you're in the community or on the call. So when that phone rings, they don't necessarily think it's a you don't know if it's a law enforcement call or an emergency medical call or a fire call or a combination of two or three. So I think that's where some of the differences are. You know, you look at training, and as of right now, DPSOs are attending the Naval Academy Athletic Commissioner Director said alongside the last of the state troopers and municipal officers. So, as of last thing in the class, I'm doing that starts this week, it, you know, it was 16 weeks. So, they attend that same training. When they do that training, the troopers stay at AOA and do, I believe, it's 3 weeks of trooper school in addition to the 16 weeks they just completed. DPSOs, after that, go to the Rural Fire Protection Specialist training, which is a 2-week fire suppression and prevention training. That's a state certification. And the goal was for the program after that, or somewhat, not necessarily in the order that I'm saying, that a DPSO would also at least reach emergency trauma technician ETT certification level to provide better medical care services, better than basic first aid and even CPR AED. So our training is similar but different. And we provide similar services like coaching, but DPSOs provide some additional services that troopers aren't necessarily trained for or trained to provide. So I hope that brings a little clarity to that portion of your question.
It does. If you know or are able to touch on the friends with respect to salary and other types of positions, that would also be helpful.
You know, last week's hearing when I just started, there was a question again. And it comes up as, I look at it as comparing apples to oranges. We're different. We have different jobs. We have different employers. You know, the starting salary for a village public safety officer is approximately $60,000. The starting salary for Alaska State Trooper, I believe, is approximately $74,000. After 1 year, a DPSO steps up to $62,000, and I believe last time I looked, the trooper is right about $80,000 in year two. And then, of course, there's differences. I mean, we all have grantees, we all have different benefit packages for our officers. We don't have the same benefit packages. You know, there's, sorry, I just said that as something that would definitely be helpful there. You know, there's additional costs, and of course, to all of our programs. Others, you know, for DPSOs, the benefits are different. Troopers, like I said, start at approximately 72, and around about 80 after year one. They have a state benefit package, receive geographic differential in rural areas. You know, that's just the beginning. You know, like we're always asked, does it cost so much for a DPSO? And like I stated earlier, you have to take into consideration that, you know, we have to pay insurance, contractual, advertising, vehicle repair. You know, a lot of our organizations that purchase vehicles using other grant funding through federal grant or fortune, if you get, but we always can't land those grants, and or we don't get enough funding to provide those items that are required to be able to provide the service that we are required to provide. But when it comes to the salary, when you ask the chair, that's pretty much the only solid information I have in the right answer. I mean, you know, from our salary schedule and from ASP's website.
Thank you, Ms. Rainer. Another staff try to give us a bit. Are there any particular grant components in the VPSO grant that could go to a nonprofit organization that has the oversight of the media program that you've not touched on, that we should be familiar with respect to the different grant components to fund VPSOs?
Not actually as a line item within the grant, but the grant does allow our organization's flexibility within 20% of our total budget without having to request an amendment. So, saying my budget is $1 million, I can move $200,000 away within that budget, but where I needed to go to complete my mission, to make sure my officers are able to complete their mission. So, say if I have a vacancy for this year, for instance, I have a vacancy for a few months and have been building that salary that I have expended, and one of my officers needed a replacement vehicle. Our vision really is no garage for folks that do work, so my VPSOs are full-time mechanics on their vehicles. And he just replaced the entire fuel system on his Explorer. And from the tank, all the way to the fuel injectors. And we were still having serious issues. And the vehicle is 6 years old, and it lives in saltwater. So instead of paying $5,000 to save the Danny Bridge, $5,000 to repair it, $5,000 to save the packages, makes sense to get a new vehicle. So that's if they can even repair it. So I was able to find money with the in-line program budget to move into equipment to make that purchase. So that is one great asset that we have as coordinators to be able to, for lack of a better term, flex our funding and move it where we need it.
Thank you. Questions on the panel? Thank you so much, Mr. Eames, for your time this morning. We know we only have you until about 9:30, so if there are any other questions or if folks want to get our office questions or if you'd like us to provide contact information, we're happy to do so. So next up is President Chuck Hamish, Richard Peterson, President of Council of Gunnheda. President Peterson, I'm honored for being here with us today. Please excuse me for talking about the presentation.
Seeing vast improvement in the relationship between the state of Alaska and then our tribal nonprofits and tribes who run these programs. I'm sharing the only listening pretty directly to anybody who doesn't have any offenses I might have, but the relationship has been garbage. And it has improved drastically under our current commissioner. I see through people pretty quickly, and I believe him. And that's a big statement for me, because when I sit here and I believe him and his efforts, and his desire to bring equity to public safety for rural Alaska, when rural Alaska has never felt equitable in the era of public safety. So we are very thankful for that. We're thankful in the governor's proposed budget. We see an increase. We hope that season 20 is through. I'm from a very small village in southeast Alaska on Prince Wales Island, about 35 miles away from Representative Lopez. I have lived what it means to have no public safety. That 4 years old, I was hidden under a bed with a Korean War vet and a PTSD and tried shooting up our But if EPSS don't just provide public safety law enforcement, they provide public safety as the fire chief, they're often the EMT, ATT leaders, they're coaches, they're volunteering in schools, they are an essential piece to our community. And so without that equitable, desperately needed service, our communities are vulnerable. And again, I grew up in a very proud village. I use that as a status of privilege, as some might use privilege minus me from the village. I feel blessed to be from the village. Our villages are rich, rich in culture, rich in history, rich in being what people envision Alaska to be, to so close to our precious resources. And our villages aren't worse than urban areas, but we have equitable problems as we have inequitable service. So if you're in Anchorage and there's a domestic violence issue, most people don't even know about it, which is another thing. In the village, it's paramount. That's what everybody knows. That's what everybody sees. They know what they're talking about it the next day. So it gets escalated, I think, publicly to be this worst problem. But the problem really isn't that there's more crime in the village. The problem is, again, inequitable service and access. I have had family and friends who have lost loved ones, where bodies, homicide have happened, and bodies have been left on site for days until law enforcement can arrive, until troopers can get on the scene. And sometimes that they can't because of weather or other issues. Maybe they're dealing with issues in other communities. You know, so I literally have, we've had bodies left under tarps in rock quarries. That's the reality. Imagine your loved one, somebody you know, being killed and left for days. Somebody having to walk over, somebody having to make sure that that's not disturbed. That's the inequities of public safety in Alaska. We live that. And so now we have a commissioner, I believe, who wants to bring equity to public safety, who understands its responsibility in the state of Alaska. So I am overjoyed to work with Commissioner Conkle. I'm overjoyed with the realignment that he's done. Our, my own coordinator, Jason Wilson, who some of you may know, has said he's never seen this level of engagement and working together between us and the state that we've seen just in the short time that Commissioner Cockrell's been in his position. It's a huge improvement. But, you know, we know we still have a long way to go. All the best intentions still won't get us there. And unfortunately, things come down to budgets. And we know that this is an underfunded program. We know that there is undue demand on the communities to even have a VPSO. They have to provide housing, they have to provide office space, and sometimes that's almost impossible for a community to do. We heard the committees talk about vehicles. Because of the relationship that private and tribal nonprofit community programs, and because we're eligible for federal funding, we provide the grants and we go for the funding to get the vehicles. And that's a huge cost, and you've heard that. We start being able to get the manufacturers in the vehicle because we don't. And we have to ship all the vehicles in for routine maintenance, which is an incredible cost, which is not really covered in our program. If you have that for science, you can do it, but it's all on you, you know. We have recruitment and retention issues. This is a 24/7 job in the village. Like, there's no off time. We burn people out. And you can imagine, if an emergency happens, they're not saying, well, you know, if the Dave just says, gets to open his door or not. It led to a very intensive job to be in our communities. And, you know, sometimes we're very fortunate to find people from our communities. But, you know, we bring them out too, and they give up, and it's really a hard thing. And then we are, you know, competing with the master state servers and recruitment retention as well, because they have the same issues. But, you know, it's that first line. The first line of defense, it's the trust that you have in your VPSO that can abate so many problems with other presence. That we know, we see it, that a lot of the things that can go on when we don't have a VPSO don't happen when we do. And, you know, we have a real problem with your recruitment. That's just the reality. I think you're doing better. The budget increase is how we're definitely utilizing that right now. But we desperately need to see this program funded equitably. And you know that we use the term equitable a lot because of the disparaging amount of equity that is in our program right now in public safety in our communities. And when I talk to our legislative friends from the urban Alaska, the money that fuels our state does not feel like our demand groups. The gold and the rare minerals have mined and increased. They're in the villages. So it's equitable to put money back into those villages. So when people say, why should we fund public safety in rural Alaska? You choose to live there. It's because we're there in Alaska so rich. So, to choose to go.
I have one. My husband's been here for an almost 3-year in looking at my income issues. As we talk a little bit about, and I need to refresh my memory and begin back into the VPSO workgroup recommendations that had been established between both chambers. As I mentioned, the department continues to work with the legislature on automating. Many of those recommendations and statute. Although the report came out was adopted in 2020, we're now in 2022. Is it your perception that some of these issues continue to be a bit timeless in the sense that what these recommendations, although adopted in 2020, do they continue to be necessary in 2022 from the VPSO program perspective?
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
If I could go to the Madam Chair, I was in the director of Murray. I really appreciate a lot of what me and the commissioner have said, and I'm feeling, you know, uplifted by the attention. One of the things that maybe just for example is probably in there is tribal recognition. We need tribal recognition to get hired. Repeatedly, a lack of knowledge, wanting to work with the federal government to figure it out, work with your tribes. We are experts in this. We run complex programs. VPSO is one of our most complex programs. You know, we run educational programs, Head Start, which is probably the most important requirements for any program to be having. You know, we run a very sophisticated program, so I can talk all day long about indirect and getting a better presentation on indirect. But, you know, if you have a relationship with tribes, that the VPSO program is successful. It's this tribal nonprofit that brings so much to the table that if you need an understanding from directly to us and work with us and help you understand that.
All right, seeing no extra questions, but I'm going to thank President Peterson for joining us today for your testimony. Again, I'd like to thank the insurance as well for producing these with. Thank you, Director Howard, for coming before the committee, as well as Mr. Neal for joining us on the line. And I'd like to thank Peterson for being here today. This concludes today's Tribal Affairs committee meeting. We will continue work on VPSO rural public safety issues this session. I appreciate the opportunity to work with the Department on this continuum.
intent.